doctor.
I mean, we were just talking about what I was going to call you. And then I was like, well, I guess you were like, I don't really care what you call me. And I was like, oh, shit. Now, what do I call him now? I was like, Doc, Alan, what's going on, man? How you doing? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for having me on, Jordan.
I was thinking, so I it's been a little hectic here. We just had a baby. And so I would like typically would put just an extra day of effort into putting together notes for you. Just like, hey, this is what I want to talk about. This is what I think we should talk about. And I woke up this morning. I was like, ah, shit, I didn't message him anything. And so I browsed your content. And we're going to crush it. You're going to crush it. We have some good topics for today. But as I sent it to you, I was like, I think this guy lives in Hawaii. I was like, yeah, it's probably, I sent it to you at like 6 a.m. I was like, he ain't seeing this before we hit record. Like, there's just no way. Like, it's 6 a.m. for you right now. How do you find that time zone affects your life? Yeah.
It's not too bad. And it's not too bad. In many cases, it probably would be. But for me, it's not too bad. And it's because that I'm an exclusive online coach to begin with. And so I actually wake and sleep essentially on a central time zone.
Nice.
And so I get up at 5 a.m. My wife's up at 4 a.m. and we go to bed by about 7:30 at night. So we're pulling the elderly people time schedule. But on Maui, you know, where I live, it actually doesn't make that big of a deal. It's not a problem because there's no nightlife here.
Right.
And in fact, there's a local thing where we call 9 p.m. Maui midnight because literally everything closes. There's no clubs. It's actually illegal here. This is going to blow your mind. It is illegal here to dance at a restaurant or a club. It's called the Footloose Rule. You cannot dance at any place that serves alcohol. Swear to God, this is an actual rule. And so to get around it, they have specific stipulations. You have to have, if you're going to have dancing, you have to have a specific, I think it's like 30 by 30 foot dance floor that cannot at any other time of the day be converted into seating for the restaurants. And so nobody has it. And so people will always talk about Maui as like a wedding destination. They'll say, well, how do you get around weddings and having alcohol? And you have to pay like $500 like certificate that allows you to do it for like that evening only. And, you know, it's a good way for the county to make money, but it's hilarious because the actual things from Footloose are a real law here.
Yeah, I just Googled it. Not that I didn't believe you, but just like,
fact check.
I was like, that's interesting. And it is 100% a thing. So if you're a listener and you're like, he's spitting some beer, I mean, it's literally verbatim what it says on the old interweb. So, I mean, I believed you, but you know, a little fact check never hurt anybody. So, you know, I've been following you for a bit. You crush on social media. Certainly we run in similar circles, but I don't know a lot about your backstory. And listen, if someone's like, lives in Hawaii, it's always an interesting question to discuss how somebody ended up there. I'm not sure necessarily if you grew up there or you moved there. So let's do the old podcast intro thing for people who don't really know, who might not know who you are, how you got into the space, what you do on a day-to-day basis, how you ended up in Hawaii, all that good stuff. Let it rip.
Sure, absolutely. I had a kind of a circuitous journey into
great
fitness.
Word.
I mean, I had started lifting when I was 17 years old. I'm 6'1" and I was 165 or 170 pounds. And I was like, okay, it's time to do something about this height to weight ratio and let's get lifting. And so that kind of got me into it. And, you know, went through college, ended up getting a doctorate in dental surgery and practiced for 10 years. And so, you know, there was always that, the lifting was always in play. I was professionally formulating for the dietary supplement industry. So I had my foot in the fitness industry for a bit at least. And, you know, I was practicing and everything was great. And at one point, my father ended up getting throat cancer and it ended up taking his life. But one of the things that we talked about towards the end there was, you know, he was a doctor for 35 years. What would you do different if you would have the chance to change anything or you know, essentially hit the replay button? And one of the things that stuck with me was he had said that he wished that he would have spent more time with friends and family, that he would have been able to have a little bit more quality of life. And at the same time, December 24th, you know, Christmas Eve, I'm supposed to be having dinner with my in-laws and I'm doing surgery at 8:30 p.m. And so these things kind of hit at the same time and it made me start to think about it. And I turned to my wife and she was a regionals qualified CrossFit competitor. And she had been to Worlds for Olympic weightlifting and she had an American record in snatch and she took silver at Worlds. And so obviously she was qualified to have some knowledge in fitness. And I said, hey, what would you think about starting up a fitness company? And you know, doing it as like a side job to begin with, just for fun. You know, we're already coaching people for free and all of our friends, our family. Why don't we make a little bit of money on the side? And she said, yeah, let's do it. And it was a great fit because she has the ability to do Olympic weightlifting and CrossFit, which I don't have the ability to do, but I'm good at, you know, bodybuilding and powerlifting. So we complemented each other really well. You know, fast forward a couple of years, things took off. You know, we got enough clientele and demand to make it a lifestyle. And I retired from practicing. And it's been a whirlwind ever since. And, you know, as far as Maui Athletics, that's why the company is named what it is. But when we were getting ready to be married, we ended up making our way out here. And I like to tell people that I tricked her into it, which she hates when I term it that way. But what was happening was we were about to get married and she was asking me all these questions about, you know, the wedding, what colors do you want? You know, what about these flowers and everything like that? And I think a lot of guys can probably commiserate with me on this and wait until the end to make judgments about me. But she kept asking me all these questions. And I said, hey, look, I don't care. And it's not that I don't care because it doesn't matter to me. It's that it really doesn't make a difference to me whether we have like a purple color or a green or whatever it is. I was like, here's the deal. Why don't you plan the wedding and I'll plan the honeymoon? And she said, oh, great. That, you know, that'll take pressure off of me. You know, we can essentially divvy up the responsibilities and that's wonderful. And that was like, that's great for me because I like planning vacations. And so I planned it to Maui and we did our honeymoon in Maui. After spending a week here, I turned to her and I said, hey, would you like to live here? She said, yes, of course. We made the plans, ended up moving out here eventually. But it was a great transition, both in business and in life to Hawaii. And, you know, been helping clients from the beach ever since.
What is your favorite and least favorite thing about living out there?
I mean, my favorite thing is the weather and the scenery. You can't beat, you know, world-class beaches everywhere you turn. You can't beat like really nice people. I mean, whenever people are on a vacation destination, they're happy, right?
Totally.
And so when you're walking around, people are excessively nice. It's different than where I grew up on the East Coast. You know, you go around New York and Boston and you give the person the wrong side eye and they're like, what the fuck is he looking at me like that for? So the wonderful thing is how nice and happy people are. You know, the outdoor activities and all that. The worst thing, medical care or getting anything done on your house. You would not believe the level of medical care out here. And there's a problem because not only are we in the middle of the Pacific, we're an outlying island. We're not Honolulu / Oahu.
Right.
And so doctors that we get here are typically kids that are 1 year out of residency. And they're like, oh, you know, I'm going to bum around the world a little bit. And so I'll go to Maui, I'll practice for a year or two, and then I'll leave. I mean, we've lived here for like 6 years now, and I've probably been through 7 primary care physicians.
Damn.
Because they just don't stay. And so, you know, thank God in my experience that I at least have training,
yep.
You know, medical school training, because there have been situations where these, and God bless them, they're trying their hardest, but there's so much that you have to learn to practice medicine. And those first 5 or 10 years are really just honing your craft, right? And so there have been situations where I've gone in and they'll make a recommendation. I'm like, well, what about this one instead? They're like, oh yeah, we'll do that.
Yeah, yeah.
And, but you know, I feel bad for people that don't have that sure. background when they come out here, because you know, you never really know when a person is telling you something, and these people are typically giving you good recommendations, but a lot of times there's this one might be a little bit better given the situation. It's just a little bit of nuance that they didn't understand or whatever it is, but that's the real downside to being out on one of those outer islands.
Yeah. Yes. It seems a price worth paying, you know, it sounds like you're doing all right and you're enjoying yourself.
To live on vacation all the time. Yeah. It's kind of worth
yeah,
it.
You're doing it right. To speak on that. I grew up in New York City, New Jersey area, and we moved to the South, to Austin, Texas, where we're in North Carolina right now. We moved South, I guess you could say. And it, unequivocally 100% in a very palpable, tangible way, people are nicer. And I would have poo pooed that as something that I would have cared about, that would have meant something to me. it meant something to me within the first month of moving out of the area. And immediately I was like, okay, people are nicer, but that's not the, like, how much does that matter? It turns out it matters like quite a bit, you know, on your like day-to-day quality of life.
Mm-hmm. Where in North Carolina do you live?
We're outside of Raleigh. So we're in a suburb of Raleigh.
So before you can actually tell me the city, because before we moved to Maui, we lived in Raleigh-Durham for 10 years. I practice in Cary.
Yeah, I'm in Holly Springs, right next to Cary.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know exactly where you are.
Oh, yeah. Super cool. Super small world. Yeah. Yeah, we love the area. North Carolina's got, you know, the seasons. We have, you know, a couple hours to the beach, a couple hours to Appalachians. And it's been really nice. Super hot and humid right now in our first like full on summer. We just got here like a year ago, but whatever, man. Like nothing's perfect.
It is one of the best places to live in the country. I loved it there. I mean, it was great. It, you know, don't get me wrong, I love Maui, but it's one of those places. That Raleigh-Durham area is wonderful because it's a great destination for foodies. You've got the mountains a couple hours to the west. Yep. You've got the beach a couple hours to the east. Yep. You know, the economy there is always really good because of the schools that are there.
Yep.
You know, the only downside to me was April and May are semi-unlivable if you have allergies.
Oh, I got wrecked. I went to an allergist for the first time in like maybe 15 years, being like, I thought I fixed this. You know, like we got here in April and May. I was like, thought I fixed this, you know?
And if you go to a gym that has an open bay door, I was going to what used to be there called Morrisville County CrossFit. They had open bay doors. Everything in there was covered in yellow throughout those 2 months.
Absolutely.
And so it was not only fun to try to grasp the bars, but, you know, trying to breathe during that was always a challenge.
Yep. Definitely is. Let's hard pivot. Let's hard pivot to what people are coming here for. You know, they want to talk about the cortisol.
Let's do it.
We want to talk about the cortisol face, and we want to talk about all this. I mean, I always crack up because like every myth has like a shred of truth where somewhere along the line has been misunderstood, extrapolated. And just, it's like a game of telephone, you know, by the time it ends up at the consumer, it's just like somewhere along the line, there was a truth here and it's just now completely been just butchered into God knows what. So, you know, if you dropped an alien out of, you know, thin air into our little fitness space, they'd be like, oh, cortisol bad, low cortisol good, things that increase cortisol bad, things that reduce cortisol good. And it's obviously quite a bit more nuanced than that. We can go on the more scientific side of things and then bring it to the more practical side. What is cortisol? And what are some of the claims that you see that people talking about in terms of it being bad or good or, you know, somewhat dichotomous in that way?
I think that one of the things that you just said there is the exact perfect segue into this, where you said that there is typically some truth and some of these claims get overblown. And I think that that's the problem. And I think that that's why these myths spread so well, because I always equate myth busting to the people that go on a podcast and really get hyperbolic about these type of things and get people worked up and fear monger. What they're doing is, we have a room, and the room is the breadth of knowledge on a subject. And what they'll do is they'll walk in and they'll take a tiny flashlight and they'll point it into one corner and they'll say, this is the information on that topic. And people don't know the difference. And they'll be like, oh, okay, cool. And then you get to the people that actually really understand what's going on. And they'll look at that and they'll walk into the room and they'll say, why don't we just turn on the fucking light? And you turn on the light and you can see the breadth of the room, which gives you more understanding rather than just that pinpoint bit of information. And like you said, particularly with cortisol, the idea that people have is that cortisol is always bad. It's a stress hormone. And so it is a natural compensatory mechanism of the body to handle stress. Now, not all stress is bad. Chronic stress, both mental and physical, can be really problematic, but acute stress can be really beneficial. I mean, exercise itself raises cortisol, and the cortisol release causes a beneficial response. So the part of the truth is that cortisol is a fat storing hormone, but it's also a fat burning hormone. And I think that people don't really understand that it's a fat burning hormone as well. And just to get down into a little bit of the nitty gritty for people, it increases the activity of lipoprotein lipase, which is a fat storing enzyme. But at the same time, it increases the hormone sensitive lipase, which is a chief fat releasing enzyme in the body. And so people get this misconception because they're only aware of the former and not the latter. And, you know, when you have both cortisol and insulin in the body, it becomes a little bit even more muddled because of the action of both of them. They actually block the action of each other by decreasing the sensitivity at the respective receptors. So if it's released, it's not actually a fat storing hormone like we've told in all situations. When they're together, insulin and cortisol, in the presence of a high calorie diet, that's where they're fat storing. But if you are at maintenance, or if you're particularly in a calorie deficit, if you're trying to lose body fat, cortisol and insulin, neither of them are going to be the reason that you are holding on to body fat. Cortisol's actions are actually beneficial, but insulin's actions are trumped by the fact that energy balance is in a negative. And I know that you understand what that means, but just to paint a clear picture for people that are listening, when energy balance is in a negative, it means that you are burning more calories than you're taking in. You cannot store body fat when you don't have the energy to store. Your body has to gain energy from somewhere. And what it's going to do is it's going to liberate fat cells. It's going to liberate glycogen stores. It's going to liberate, unfortunately, lean muscle if, you know, situations aren't optimal or if the calorie deficit is too severe. But because cortisol is a stress hormone, you would think that if obesity was caused by cortisol, the highest levels of cortisol would be seen in the obese. But what's interesting about this, when we look at the levels of cortisol, if you take blood levels, monitor cortisol in people, you actually see a U-shaped curve. You see the highest levels of cortisol in both the really thin and in the very obese, not just the very obese. And this, again, goes back to the fact that cortisol is a stress hormone. And when is the body the most stressed? When you're outside of homeostasis, when you're underfed, when you're overfed. So both of these situations will see the highest cortisol. And it's not the fact that cortisol is necessarily causing these problems as a root cause. It's that you have issues with your energy intake. You have issues with your overall stress, and your body is drastically fighting to bring you back to stable. So all forms of stress can cause this release. And understanding that the situations in which this is released is really the main thing here can help people understand what's going on. You can understand that cortisol can be used to lose body fat. You can understand that cortisol in some situations can cause body fat deposition. But this is typically chronically elevated cortisol. This is typically in a calorie surplus. So if you get outside of these two situations, cortisol management is probably one of the least important things in your life. And if you're trying to take supplements, or God forbid, you're going out and you're self-medicating prescription medications to control cortisol levels, you're actually preventing your body potentially from both liberating fat and from adapting to the stresses that you have in your life. You need the cortisol to get the best results from the training that you do in the gym. So if you're taking all of these supplements to control cortisol, you may actually be blunting your results. And so it's kind of a rudimentary way to explain cortisol, but it's important nuance to understand, because this is not a bad hormone. It's a very, very beneficial hormone. It's just a misunderstood hormone.
It's great. Perfect. And I don't want to throw out people trying to learn about stuff. I feel this way a lot about insulin, about metabolic adaptation. Just as you're talking, there's so many things that fall into this bucket of, it's kind of interesting to learn about, but the average person should never think about. Like, you never,
right.
If I ask you the thing you're doing to improve your health, and why you're doing it, the answer should never be to lower my cortisol. You're not, right. That's not an outcome that you are seeking. And when we see that upside down U-shaped curve, that's likely indicative of reverse causation. It's not the cortisol causing those states. It's those states being a state of being outside, like you said, homeostasis, that are more likely to be, you know, a stressed out physiology where you're really, really, really mega lean, or, you know, a lot of excess body fat in a more of an obese state. It's not that those people are in those states because of cortisol. It's likely we see some cortisol dysregulation because of the state they're in.
Exactly.
There's also this misunderstanding of, like, acute elevations of certain markers don't actually equal or compound aggregate to long-term outcomes. So, like, if we just look at, like, yes, is chronically elevated blood sugar and insulin not a good thing? Correct. Totally not a good thing. Is acutely elevating blood sugar and insulin doing that? Does that aggregate? Does it accumulate into what? Like, people hear the word chronic and they think all the time, and they think, okay, so if there's this thing I don't want all the time, then if I reduce the acute increases of that thing, then I will, you know, fight against this thing being elevated all the time. It's not actually how that works. Mostly like chronically elevated things like insulin or cortisol dysregulation. It's more about like a metabolic dysfunction issue. It's not, oh, you did a certain thing that increased this thing acutely too many times and now you have it all the time. You know, I think cortisol maybe is a little bit trickier because you can have somewhat chronic life stress. You can be in a state of life stress that is a little bit more perpetual. It's not necessarily like eating a carbohydrate and then that's more of like a single bolus of carbohydrate or a single workout bout and then seeing the impact of that. It's like if I told you, you know, here's a thing that's going to raise your blood pressure, raise your blood sugar, raise your cortisol. And you'd be like, well, I'm not doing that. And it's like, yeah, but that's lifting weights or that's like going for a run or that's like all these things that are good for you and actually decrease, or I don't want to say decrease cortisol, but like keep those things where they should be. It's actually a net benefit chronically, a net benefit long-term. I don't want to poo-poo it because it's fun to talk about. We're going to talk about this like misunderstanding of where there are shreds of truth within this, you know, how does cortisol affect our body weight in some way? But I don't want to completely throw it out, but I do think it's in the bucket of, hey, this is super interesting to learn about. Like, it's fun. Like, hormones are fun to talk about. They're fascinating. But, you know, in your pursuit of getting healthier, it really shouldn't be like an outcome you're specifically trying to tackle.
Yeah, I think the micromanaging hormones in general is a really bad idea. And I mean, this is a great segue to some other ones. I mean, people try to do this with everything. They try to do it with testosterone. They try to do it with insulin. I mean, you hear all the time, oh, I'm going to start my workout with squat because squat raises my testosterone the most, or a big compound lift. And again, this is majoring in the minor. It really doesn't matter. Can you do that? Yes. Are there reasons potentially that you would start with a big compound lift? There certainly are. Raising testosterone is not one of them because, again, these acute spikes don't necessarily translate to health benefits or health problems.
What about
your body is incredibly good at maintaining homeostasis? I mean, you adapt really, really well. You don't want to try to micromanage testosterone or estrogen. Men try to micromanage estrogen all the time, thinking it's this bad thing, when in reality, it buffers your joints. It helps with blood lipids. And I see these people that are like, well, I need to lower my estrogen because I'm holding some water. There is a 99% chance that you're not holding water because of your estrogen levels. Could it be? Yeah, it could. But 99% of people that think that that's the problem, you're probably downing, you know, 10,000 grams of salt per day. And you're doing all these other things that are causing you to retain some water. You know, insulin is the same thing. And when you were talking about that, I was thinking of glucose goddess the entire time when you were like, there are people that, you know, try to micromanage insulin and you see people with continuous glucose monitors. You see people that are meal sequencing where they're like, I need to have, you know, my fiber first and then my protein and then my fat last, or whatever sequence that they do, because depending on who you talk to, they switch it up. Or they try to have, you know, a certain number of meals per day to control glucose spikes and an insulin response. And it's funny because you talk to these people and they're like, well, I don't want to have a chronically elevated glucose, which means, you know, six small meals per day is really, really a big problem because then I'll have an elevated glucose at all times. So only eat two meals per day and then your glucose isn't elevated as long. Well, yeah, but now your elevations are massively high, you know, at 2 points in the day. And that's not a problem either for people that that have glucose handling, a standard glucose handling in their body. You don't have metabolic dysfunction. But the mindset that we've got here is literally just fueling orthorexia nervosa and not providing any benefits to these people. And you have to realize that if you don't have metabolic dysfunction, you don't need to control your insulin or your glucose response because your body controls it by itself. And your point was wonderful, where you said that just because something is acutely elevated multiple times per day does not categorize it as a chronic elevation. And that is 100% true. And people need to realize that. That doesn't mean that the machinery in your body is in dysfunction or it's going to wear your system down. Or the other one that I love to hear is when people are like, you have to eat two meals a day because you need to give your GI system some time to rest. I mean, do you hold your breath to give your lungs some time to rest? Do you stop your heart beating to give your heart some time to rest? Like, smooth muscle is amazing at functioning Constantly. I mean, from the day that you're born until the day that you die. And there has never been any research to suggest that we need to give our GI systems some time to chill out or you know, calm down. But this idea of acute stimulation versus chronic stimulation, just like we covered in all these small different topics, I mean, it is very nuanced. And people who are trying to sell you on something really try to get you to micromanage these things. And every time I talk with professionals about this, it's really funny because when you talk with a person that really knows fitness and nutrition, they're boring as hell. And they're boring as hell because there are two answers that they'll give you on every question that you ask for fitness and nutrition. It's either it depends, which is the answer that pisses everybody off because it sucks that there's not a specific answer to, you know, every question when it's there's a lot of individualization in some of the things. The other thing that really pisses people off and that what makes sense in the context of what we're talking about right now is, well, if I'm not supposed to micromanage my hormones, what should I focus on? And this is literally the rote answer to every fitness and nutrition related question. Get your nutrition, training, stress, sleep, and hydration under control. Okay, well, what do I do to build muscle? Get your nutrition, training, stress, hydration, sleep. What do I do to lose fat? Get your nutrition, you know, and it's always these same things. And it's never, okay, well, you have to eat your salad first and then you eat your steak and then you, like, I guess, eat butter with a spoon. Like, you don't, this is the bullshit that people get caught into because we don't want to know a lot of times that the answer is relatively simple. Now, that doesn't mean that it's easy, and there is some nuance to the way that you do these simple things. But I think far and away, people will typically know what they're supposed to be doing. Now, maybe putting that effort forward is a little bit confusing, and that's where you get a coach or a professional to really give you that blueprint. If you want to drive from DC to Chicago, you know you need to be going west. Maybe you don't know which exact road to take. So you know the general thing of which you should do. The coach is your GPS to show you which exact road to take. So the answers from people that really know what they're doing in most cases are very simplistic. And this is why this type of stuff doesn't spread on social media very well. But it is why things like micromanaging all these hormones spreads really well, because it seems like it's a trick or it's a secret or it's something that's sexy in some way. And maybe the reason that we didn't get to where we wanted to be in the first place is because we didn't know this simple trick. But the reality is, if it's a trick, it's typically sensationalized or hyperbolic content.
Yep. Yep.
And so it's one of the things that you need to look out for.
Yep. And you were talking about micromanaging hormones. And one that always cracks me up is fasting to increase growth hormone. Like, I'll just be, I'll level with you. Not eating will never be anabolic. Like, there's nothing anabolic about not eating. Like, it's just like.
So you're 100% right. And I think that, again, this is a HGH is a compensatory mechanism in the body. And I don't think that people really understand. I had this conversation with somebody the other day where they were like, well, should I take, you know, GH to get bigger? GH is not really an extremely anabolic hormone. And people don't really get that because bodybuilders take GH. Yep. But bodybuilders don't take GH as a way to really build large amounts of muscle. Does it build muscle? Yeah, secondarily, because it can increase some downstream hormones in a way, but it's not very good at it. The reason that you take HGH, particularly when you're cutting, and this is where they really up their doses in bodybuilding, you take it in cutting for a couple reasons. It helps with recovery, which yep. is of paramount importance when your calories are lower. It helps prevent muscle loss. It's very good at preventing muscle protein breakdown, which is why your body upregulates it when you fast. Your body says, we don't have enough calories right now to keep our lean muscle mass. And your body wants to keep lean muscle mass as much as possible because that's how you lived when you were a caveman. And so your body will upregulate HGH. Not to build muscle or give you health benefits, to prevent muscle loss. It is preventing this drop. The other thing that HGH does is it actually helps you liberate fat cells fairly well. And so bodybuilders will take it particularly in cuts because it helps you get more lean. It helps you stay leaner when you're in a bulk. And so HGH isn't majorly done for an anabolic benefit. And I think that people don't really realize that it's not really oriented at skeletal muscle hypertrophy. Anyways, if anything, it's smooth muscle hypertrophy. And this is why you get overgrowth of heart muscle when people take HGH too much, and this is probably one of the reasons for deaths of bodybuilders that, you know, essentially abuse HGH, insulin, and these types of things, because it really stresses the heart out. And having, you know, a megaly situation of the heart's not a good thing. But to your point, fasting, the benefits of fasting have been massively overblown. Now, it can be used effectively, but in most cases, particularly for the HGH claim, if you think that it's going to build muscle, we, one, have all the problems that we just discussed, on top of the fact that you are actually downregulating a hormone that is very specific to building muscle. IGF-1 drops dramatically when you fast. Trading off an IGF-1 drop for an HGH increase is in no way a net benefit for hypertrophy. And people don't seem to realize this. I mean, there is no benefit to fasting that is not also seen with a continuous diet when you equate calories and protein for anything, not for autophagy. I'm breaking hearts here.
No, you should go. Not you should. For- you should. I mean, you should. And the autophagy one kills me because, and you even said it about the fewer larger meals with GI tract. Like, people are like, if you fast, you increase autophagy. Fine. Like, let this, like, cool. Like, let's start with that. But you eventually have to eat. And if you equate for calories, then when you do eat, whatever you did will have the equal but opposite effect. If you're like, I got to give my GI a break, so I eat one meal a day. It's like, yeah, that meal's going to be like 2,000 to 3,000 calories. Like, you giving it a break then? You know, if you don't eat all day and you eat one meal per day, you're like, I'm autophagizing all day. And I'm like, yeah, but then you eat 3,000 calories and you're digesting that for like fucking 6 to 8 hours. You know, are you autophagizing then, or is it just going to end up being a net neutral? You know, probably that.
I think that people also, autophagy is really one that got out of hand because people are using molecular studies or showing that there are benefits to this, but not showing what the practical benefits are to these methods that we use to try to increase it. And it's not that autophagy doesn't happen outside of the presence of fasting. It still happens. It just doesn't happen to the same extent. But you don't have any quantifiable health benefits to fasting that you don't also get with a continuous diet, because the main driver of autophagy is a calorie deficit anyways. So what they'll do is they'll look at people with a little bit of excess body fat and they'll have them fast and they'll say, hey, look, you know, this raised and their health markers improved. Well, yeah, they lost body fat, which is the number one way to improve these health markers. On top of the fact that we can increase autophagy with more benefits through other methods. I mean, exercise itself increases autophagy. If you have body fat, like I said, the calorie deficit increases autophagy. So extended fasts come with a lot of problems. I mean, I have no problem if a person tells me, hey, to lose body fat or to maintain weight, I do a 16-8 intermittent fast. Okay, cool. That can work great. And I use it with my clients a lot, you know, particularly with people that like to eat in that manner. And it's fine because you're not fasting long enough to cause micronutrient deficiencies. You're not fasting long enough to cause massive drops in energy. You're not fasting long enough to cause lean muscle loss, which is a real problem with these 24-hour or longer fasts, particularly the more frequently you do them. And so people love these fasts because Gary Brecka is an idiot with a large platform, and then people will see this and they'll be like, oh, he knows what he's doing. Gary Brecka has zero knowledge on health and fitness, like absolutely none. He's a shyster that found something that can trick people. And the way that this tricks people is that when you fast for extended periods of time, you lose muscle glycogen, you lose body water. You know, it makes you look very lean in a short period of time. And the scale drops like crazy because when you shed water weight, you shed muscle glycogen, that's not necessarily shedding body fat. Now, you certainly shed body fat too if you're doing this for extended periods of time. But again, when you start doing this for extended periods of time, you also lose significant lean muscle mass, which is probably the worst thing that you can do, because lean muscle mass is a metabolic sink. It is the number one thing. Strength in lean muscle is the number one thing to prevent injury. It's much harder to gain muscle than it is to lose body fat. So you're really setting yourself back, on top of the fact that having more lean muscle makes you burn more calories at rest. Granted, it's only about 10 calories per pound. But even when you work out, you burn more calories as you work out because it's a metabolically active tissue. So the more that you do this, and typically people that fast are not the people with significant amounts of lean muscle mass, the people that fast are the people that I've got excess body fat. I've tried all these other things. I really need something to motivate me. And the scale change that's drastic really motivates me. So these people that are essentially under muscled are losing more and more and more muscle. And the reason that they're on the diet coaster, diet roller coaster doing these fads is because it becomes more difficult to lose body fat every session that you do these fasts, because you're losing more of your resting metabolic rate from loss of muscle. You're losing more of your ability to handle glucose from the fact that you don't have that metabolic sink of having more lean muscle. You're essentially compounding your problems by doing these extended fasts. And this is the exact same concern that I have with those the things like Wegovy and Ozempic, the GLP-1 agonists. And I'm not against these. I'm actually a big fan of these if you have an eating disorder, if you have diabetes. But the same concerns as fasting line up, that if you're taking this indiscriminately just to see the scale go down, it will absolutely help, because it does. But it works mainly through adjusting your appetite. It makes you less hungry. And so you lose body fat essentially much more quickly. You lose weight essentially much more quickly than you ever have in the past. If you are using this to avoid what you should have been doing in the beginning, weight training, nutrition, sleep, all that bullshit that we talked about, that's always the answer. You're going to put yourself in a position where you're probably going to have very decreased health later in life. And people we just haven't had the anecdotal experiences to show this yet, but this is where this is going. And if you talk to people, there's a lot of people that are fear-mongering these, saying, hey, look, they're causing a lot of lean muscle mass loss. Well, this wouldn't happen if you slept right, if you had nutrition, if you had weight training in play. But people are using this to replace those things because they're like, oh, that's too hard. But the exact same thing with fasting is going to come into play in 10, 20 years. You're going to have these severely under-muscled people. They're going to be frail. They're going to have potential risks for sarcopenia, osteopenia, you know, osteoporosis, all of these problems, because we're not focusing on those boring things that really make the difference. And so that is probably one of the funniest segues to all these different topics that you've had. But it's so funny how these things are all interconnected. And the main unifying theme here is, be careful about these fads. If you see something like this that, you know, has all of a sudden cropped up and is the holy grail of what you're trying to do next, there's probably a reason that at least you should be critical of this information and go look at multiple sources to see if you can get somebody to turn on the light in the room, as opposed to shining a flashlight on a single spot.
Yeah, there are a few of these. There are a few, if not none, or in very small, unique circumstances, these things that are not improved to a meaningful degree by this shit that we just mentioned. It's like, if you give me all like the things that people are micromanaging, like I want more autophagy, I want better insulin, blood glucose control, better blood pressure, I want my cortisol regulated, like all of the things we just said. It's like, yeah, cool. You could do that. It's the same list that you already knew you needed to do. You don't even have to think about that stuff. Think about this stuff, and you will fix that stuff.
You'll control all of it.
Yeah, yeah, you control all of it. So let's tie it right back to cortisol just for a hot second here. Of like, where is that shred of truth there? Where it's like, oh, I'm doing all this intense exercise, or my life is super stressed out, and now I can't lose weight. I'm increasing belly fat. Where is there the shred of truth, and how has that been extrapolated and misunderstood?
That shred of truth is that in those chronic stress situations, and it's typically not from working out. I mean, the chances that you're causing a chronic stress situation from working out, you literally have to be having like a disorder where like you're not leaving the gym for like 8 or 9 hours a day. I mean, that might be a little bit of hyperbole on my part, but you know, if you're doing the standard workouts 1 to 2 hours a day or whatever it is, you're not causing a chronic stress response. If you're working out 3 or 4 times in a day, I mean, you're going to have some clear signs of a mental disorder. And I don't mean that to be a bad thing. I mean that to be honest with yourself. And if you're like, man, I have to be in the gym for like 8 hours a day, even if it's split over multiple sessions, maybe I should get some help with this, because recovery is a really important thing. Outside of those situations, it's rare. In situations where you actually have chronic stress or a or an actual disease state that's causing you to secrete too much cortisol. Those are the real issues that we should be worrying about. Maybe you had the death of a family member. Maybe you got a divorce. I mean, these are the situations where maybe it could actually be more likely to happen. The truth is that cortisol can increase the activity of lipoprotein lipase. That's the body's major fat storing enzyme. So when that's done, that can be upregulated in these times of chronic stress. When in combination with a calorie surplus, which when you're in a calorie surplus, you tend to be releasing more insulin. That triple whammy of the LPL, the insulin, and a calorie surplus, that's where you'll really start to cause some body fat accretion. And unfortunately, when cortisol is in play in these situations, a lot of that can become visceral fat. And this is really problematic from a health standpoint, because when you have fat around the organs, that's when health parameters tend to take a nosedive, particularly the more that you accumulate. And so cortisol can be bad. It's just not likely. And so I want people to look at these situations that they have and say, am I worrying about this because I'm challenging myself in the gym? Okay, I probably shouldn't worry about that. Am I worrying about this because I have some sort of disease state, because I have some kind of massive trauma in my life? I mean, do I have post-traumatic stress disorder? Do I have a reason to consider, this a real issue? And if you do, the answer is contact your primary care physician, get some blood work, see if there's potential risk there, and then talk to them about a potential referral to a psychiatrist. And in the past, this has been a real kind of taboo subject, but I think within the past 10 or 15 years, people have turned around to the benefits that mental health can really give. And I think that there's no longer a massive stigma around like seeing a psychiatrist or potentially even getting medication for anxiety or depression during these periods. I mean, and even if you go in and you say, I don't really want to be on medication, well, the alternative is chronic cortisol and a whole other host of problematic processes in the body, because stress is incredibly negative. I mean, not only does it impact things like cortisol, I mean, your sleep is screwed up. And then once your sleep gets screwed up, testosterone production gets screwed up. Your ability to lose body fat gets screwed up. Your ability to lose more lean muscle mass increases. And energy balance is a very real thing, where your energy balance determines weight loss or weight gain, but there's a lot of things within that system that determines what you lose or what you gain. And sleep is a very big thing there, and people don't realize that. I push sleep all the time in my content online, because if you look at the research, having 8 or 8.5 hours of sleep a night for athletic individuals, if you work out, you need more sleep than the 7 hours, particularly if you work out regularly. And it looks to be between 8 or 10 hours is where we want to hit. But if you have below that, you have the potential, particularly at 6.5 or lower, to lose, when you're losing weight, lose significantly more lean muscle, maintain significantly more body fat. And the reverse is also true. If you're in a calorie surplus, you'll gain a lot less muscle, you'll gain a lot more body fat. And so these systems are all interrelated, and understanding how they work can really allow you to really understand what's going on. But, it's understanding that these hormones, trying to micromanage them outside of disease state or real mental trauma, is probably majoring in the minor. And you're better served to get the rest of the really important things, the big rocks in the basket, and then you'll be able to take care of what you really need to take care of.
Got it. Lift weights, do some cardio, eat a lot of plants, enough protein, sleep, manage stress, don't have too much body fat. Super boring stuff, man. This is why you're not any good at social media. This is why you can't 10x your following with this shit. Are you kidding?
Like, I know.
Yeah. Cool, man.
I'm good to talk to if you want some good information. I'm not good to talk to if you want somebody who's good at marketing.
Yeah, you're terrible at it. Yeah, it's good though. It's good to have you around. Let people know where they can find you. What's a good place to come and see? I know you're on Instagram. I don't know if you're big anywhere else.
Sure. You can check out my website at MauiAthletics.com. If you go to the footer, I've got links to all my social media. Otherwise, you can look me up on Instagram at Dr. Alan Bacon. It's Allan. And certainly, if you have any questions about what we talked about today, if you want to, you know, say, hey, Alan, can you get me, you know, references to explain what you talked about? Sure, I can do that. Just send me a DM anytime.
Cool. You ever get a? I mean, dude, you're with a guy with the last name Bacon. You're sure fighting the fight against the carnivore pretty hard. So, it's just a little bit of an oxymoron, a little bit of a an unfortunate,
it's an ironic thing.
Ironic thing there. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool, man. All right. I appreciate your time. Super, super helpful wealth of knowledge. If you don't follow Alan, definitely go give him a follow.
Thank you, Jordan. I appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Where Optimal Meets Practical. If you liked the episode, it would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media or left a 5-star review on iTunes. That stuff really helps. If you ever want to get in touch with me, just shoot me a DM on Instagram @JordanLipsFitness. I'm always around to chat. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.